Ho Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Starring Michael Horden as Jeeves and Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster in Joy in the Morning, with Peter Woodthorpe as Percy Lord Worplesdon, Jonathan Cecil as Boko Fittleworth, and Denise Brier as Edwin the Boy Scout. Episode 4, Sundry Happenings in a Garden.
Boko Fittleworth was smirking. I doubt if in all Hampshire that night you could have found a fellow more thoroughly satisfied with himself, for he got it firmly rooted in his mind that he'd captured a burglar and thus saved Bumpley Hall, the residence of my uncle by marriage, Percival Lord Warbleston, from being looted. What the silly ass didn't know was that the bird he had locked in the potting shed was not a burglar at all, but J. Chichester Clam, an American businessman who had checked in that evening for a top-secret conference with the relative. Also among those present in the gardens and messages were Jeeves, who was advising Uncle Percy on his business affairs, Police Constable Stilton Cheesewright, who was affianced to Warpleston's daughter, Lady Florence Cray, and myself. Boko and I had come along earlier in the evening to bust a scullery window, the idea being that Boko could then so impress Uncle Percy by raising the alarm that the old buzzard would give his consent to the marriage of Boko and his ward, Nobby Hopwood. That he had now, as he supposed, gone one better and caught a genuine burglar was, not unnaturally, the cause of Boko's present elation. Indeed, he would not be overstating it to say that he had got it right up his nose. That this was so was borne in upon me by the fact that he started right away tapping Uncle Percy's chest like a woodpecker and calling him my dear Warpleston, things which in his calmer moments he wouldn't have done for a bet.
Ah, my dear Worplesdon.
What?
So you're up and about, are you?
What?
Capital, capital.
What?
Oh, Stilton, too.
Eh?
And Jeeves. And Bertie. Fine.
What?
Fine. Between the five of us, we ought to be well able to overpower the miscreant. I don't know if you were listening to what I was saying just now, but I've locked a burglar up in the potting shed.
Will you stop prodding me, sir? What's all this nonsense about burglars?
Nonsense, Warpleston?
How do you know the fellow's a burglar?
My dear Warpleston, would anybody but a burglar be lurking in potting sheds at this time of night? Ah, Florence!
Never mind the hour, Florence. What is going on here? Father, what is all this noise and disturbance? I was woken up by someone shouting.
Me? I was catching a burglar.
Catching a burglar?
You never spoke a truer word.
But how did you catch a burglar?
Oh, well, it's just a knack.
I mean, what are you doing here at this time of night?
Exactly. The very thing I want to know, the precise question I was about to ask myself. What the devil are you doing here, Fittleworth? I'm not aware that I invited you to infest me private grounds and go charging about them like a buffalo. And the idea of locking people in my potting shed. I've never heard of anything so officious in my life.
Officious?
Yes, damned officious.
Well, I'm dashed. Well, I must say. Well, I'm blown. Officious, eh? That's the attitude you take, is it? Ha! Jeeves.
Sir?
What did Shakespeare say about ingratitude?
Blow, blow, thou winter wind, sir. Thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude. He also alludes to the quality as thou marble-hearted fiend.
And he wasn't so dashed far wrong. I brood over this house like a guardian angel, sacrificing my sleep and leisure to its interests. I sweat myself to the bone catching burglars.
Burglars, indeed. All silly nonsense. The man is probably some harmless wayfarer who's taken refuge in my potting shed from the store.
What store?
Never mind what store.
There isn't a store.
All right, all right.
It's a lovely night. No suggestion of a store.
All right, we aren't talking about the weather. We are talking about this poor waif in my potting shed. I say he's probably just some harmless wayfarer, and I refuse to persecute the unfortunate fellow. What harm has he done?
Warpleston, you're a silly ass.
How dare you call me a silly ass? Jeeves!
My lord?
Here are 10 shillings. Go and give it to the poor chap and let him go. Tell him to buy himself a warm bed and supper.
Very good, my lord.
What? 10 shillings, eh? Supper, egad. Warm bed, forsooth. Well, this lets me out. I wash my hands of the whole affair. Next time you have burglars in this loony bin, Warpleston, I shall pat them on the back and hold the ladder for them. Good night.
And full to the brim of dudgeon, he strode off into the darkness. I can't say I blamed him, but though seeing his viewpoint, I groaned in spirit. The tender Worcester heart had been deeply touched by the non-smooth running of the course of the Boko Nobby true love, and I was just wondering whether it would be any use my following Boko and putting in a soothing word, and feeling on the whole perhaps not, when I observed Jeeves returning.
Well, Jeeves?
A disturbing evening, sir. I released Mr. Clam.
What did he say?
He inquired of me, sir, whether what he had experienced was the start of the collapse of civilization.
Yes, he must have wondered what had hit him when Boker slammed that door. He must have felt like a man stooping to pluck a nosegay of wild flowers on a railway line who suddenly struck in the small of the back by the Cornish Express. However, Jeeves, never mind about Clam now. Clam leaves me cold. The chap I'm worrying about is Boko.
Yes.
Well, silly idiot. Alienating Uncle Percy like that.
Precisely, sir. It was a pity that the young gentleman's manner could not have been more conciliatory.
He's sunk unless you can think of some way of healing the breach.
Yes, sir.
This is going to be a great blow to Nobby, Jeeves, a great blow. The poor young prune is probably lying in bed even now, convinced that our window-busting scheme has delivered the goods.
No, sir.
No,
sir. Miss Hopwood is at present in the garden. I encountered her just after releasing Mr. Clam from his incarceration and took the liberty of informing her of the failure of this evening's enterprise.
Oh, well, how did she take it?
At first, I regret to say, sir, the young lady seemed disposed to suspect you of having failed to effectuate your part of the operation.
What? Me?
I hasten to exculpate you, sir, informing Miss Hopwood that you had done all within your power to fracture the scullery window, but had been prevented by the force of circumstance.
Oh, thank you, Jeeves.
Not at all, sir.
So you put all the blame on Boko, did you?
I would not go so far as to say that, sir. I merely related to Miss Hopwood the events of the evening, stressing throughout the prominent part played in them by the young gentleman.
And what did you say to that?
That she wished to remonstrate with him, sir. Tick him off, was, if I recall it correctly, the expression employed. When I last saw Miss Hopwood, she was proceeding rapidly in the direction taken some minutes earlier by Mr. Fittleworth.
Oh, Lord, I dare say she's caught him by now. Look, you better pop along, Jeeves, and separate the contestants before blood begins to flow. Circle round until you hear a raised soprano voice, and that'll be the spot to head for.
Very good, sir.
And strain the bean to the utmost in order to hit upon some new scheme for sweetening Uncle Percy.
I will endeavour to do my best, sir.
I don't mind what it is, just think of something.
Very good, sir.
After Jeeves had popped off, I started to do a bit of pacing to and fro, knitting the brows. And I'd been knitting them for about 5 minutes when a dim figure suddenly loomed up before me in the darkness, and I realized it was Boko, come to play a return date. He was looking subdued and chastened, as if his soul had been passed through a ringer. He wore the unmistakable air of a man who has just been properly told where he gets off by the girl of his dreams and has not yet reassembled the stunned faculties.
Hello, Bertie.
Pip-pip, Boko.
Some night.
Considerable.
You haven't a flask on you, have you?
No.
A pity. One should always carry a flask about in case of emergencies. St. Bernard dogs do it in the Alps. 50 billion St. Bernard dogs can't be wrong. Oh, I just passed through a great emotional experience, Bertie.
Did Nobby find you?
I've just been chatting with her. Where do girls pick up these expressions?
What expressions?
Well, I couldn't repeat them with gentlemen present. I suppose they learn them at their finishing schools.
She gave you beans, did she?
With no niggardly hand. It was an extraordinary feeling, standing there while she put me through it. While one had a dazed sensation of something small and shrill whirling about one, seething with fury, like being attacked by a Pekingese.
I'd never been attacked by a Pekingese.
Well, ask the man who has. He'll tell you. Every moment I was expecting to get a nasty nip in the ankle.
How did it all end?
Oh, well, I got away with my life. Still, what's life?
Life's all right.
Not if you lost the girl you love.
Have you lost the girl you love?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I can't make up my mind. It all depends what construction you place on the words, I never want to see or speak to you again in this world or the next, you miserable fathead.
Did she say that?
Among other things.
I wouldn't let that worry me, Burger.
You wouldn't?
No, she didn't mean it.
Didn't mean it?
Of course not.
Just said it for something to say, making conversation, as it were.
Absolutely. Dismiss it from the mind.
Hmm. There's one thing, of course. She used to love me. As recently as this afternoon, dearly, she said so. One's got to remember that.
She still does.
You really feel that, do you?
Of course.
In spite of calling me a miserable fathead?
Certainly, you are a miserable fathead.
That's true.
You can't go by what a girl says when she's giving you the devil for making a chump of yourself. It's like Shakespeare. Sounds well, but doesn't mean anything.
Your view, then, is that the old affection still lingers.
Definitely. Love is indestructible. Its holy flame burneth forever.
Who told you that?
Jeeves.
He ought to know.
He does. You can bank on Jeeves.
That's right. You can, can't you? You're a great comfort, Bertie.
I try to be better.
You give me hope. You raise me from the depths.
Oh, Jeeves, is that you?
Precisely, sir. I have come with a message for Mr. Fittleworth, sir.
Yes?
From Miss Hopwood.
Oh, golly.
She desires to speak to you again.
Oh, my God. An encore. Righto, Jeeves. Lead on, and I'll follow.
Very good, sir.
Jeeves?
Sir?
When you've finished escorting Boko, could you get me whiskey and splash? I feel rather in need of an elixir at the moment of speaking.
Very good, sir. I will bring it immediately.
Despite the order I had placed for a strengthening snort, I may say at once that I viewed Nobby's outburst without concern. To Boko, who had actually been in the ring with the young geezer while she was exploding in all directions, it had naturally seemed that the end of the world had come and Judgment Day set in with unusual severity. But to me, the cool, level-headed bystander, the whole thing had been pure routine. One shrugged the shoulders and recognized it for what it was, viz., pure applesauce. Love's silken bonds are not broken just because the female half of the sketch takes umbrage at the loony behaviour of the male partner and hauls off and lets him have it in the neck. Already I felt the second phase had probably set in, where the female lovebird weeps on the male lovebird's chest and says she's sorry she was cross. And that my surmise was correct was proved by Boko's demeanour as he rejoined me some minutes later. His whole soul had obviously expanded, like a bath sponge placed in water.
Bertie? Hello?
Still there?
On the spot.
It's all right, Bertie.
She loves you still?
Yes.
Good.
She wept on my chest.
Fine.
And said she was sorry she'd been cross. I said, there, there, and everything's once more gas and gators.
Splendid.
I felt terrific.
I bet you did.
Jeeves, who was present, was much affected.
Oh, Jeeves was there?
Yes. And then we discussed plans and schemes.
For sweetening Uncle Percy?
Yes, for of course that still has to be done.
It's going to be difficult.
Not a bit. Jeeves has come across with one of his ripest suggestions.
He has?
What a man.
Yes. What's his idea?
Briefly this. He thinks it would make an excellent impression and enable me to recover lost ground if I stuck up for old Worplesdon.
With a gun, you mean?
No, I didn't say stuck him up. Stuck up for him. In other words, he advises me to take the old boy's part, protect him, as it were.
Protect Uncle Percy?
Oh, I know that sounds bizarre, but Jeeves thinks it'll work.
I still don't get it.
Well, it's perfectly simple, really. Look here. Suppose some great blustering brute of a chap charges into old Worplesdon's study at 10 sharp tomorrow morning and starts ballyragging him like the dickens, calling him every name under the sun and generally making himself thoroughly offensive, I'm waiting outside the study window, and at the psychological moment, I stick my head in and in a quiet, reproving voice say, "Stop, Bertie."
Bertie?
Yeah, the chap's name is Bertie, but don't interrupt, I'll lose the thread. I stick my head in and say, "Stop, Bertie. You're strangely forgetting yourself. I cannot stand by and listen to you abusing a man I admire and respect as highly as Lord Worplesdon. When I hear you calling him..."
Boko?
Yes?
You want me to go into Uncle Percy's lair and call him names?
10 sharp.
And you bob up and tick me off for ticking him off?
That's the idea. He can hardly fail to show me up in a sympathetic light, causing him to warm to me and feel that I'm a pretty good chap after all. I mean, there he'll be, I mean to say, cowering in his chair while you stand over him, shaking your finger in his face.
You say Jeeves suggested that?
Well, as I told you, just like a flash.
He must be tight.
I don't understand you, Bertie. I rank the scheme among his very subtlest efforts.
I'm sorry, Boko.
Sorry? Why?
Include me out.
What?
Nothing doing.
Bertie!
Yes, I know, but I repeat, nothing doing.
Nothing doing?
Nothing doing.
You refuse to do your bit?
I do.
You... I want to get this straight. You really decline to play your part, your simple, easy part in this enterprise?
That's right.
This is Bertie Wooster speaking.
It is.
The Bertie Wooster I was at school with.
That's right.
Well, if anybody had told me this would happen, I wouldn't have believed it. I'd have laughed mockingly. Bertie Wooster let me down? No, no, I'd have said. Not Bertie, who is not only at school with me, but is at this very moment bursting with my meat.
Bursting? Ha!
Nevertheless.
I'm sorry, Boko.
So am I, Bertie. Sorry and disappointed. Sick at heart is the expression that leaps to the lips. Well, I suppose I'll have to go and break the news to Nobby. Golly, I shall cry.
Oh, well, I don't want to make Nobby cry.
Oh, you will, though. Gallons. Gallons.
And sighing reproachfully, he faded away and left me alone with the stars. I'd been examining them for some minutes and wondering what had given Jeeves the idea that they were quiring to the young-eyed cherubims. I couldn't see the slightest indication of such a thing myself. When they suddenly merged, as if they'd been Uncle Percy and J. Chichester Clam, and became a jagged sheet of flame. This was because a hidden hand, creeping up behind me unperceived, had given me the diggings of a slosh with what I assumed to be some blunt instrument. It caught me squarely on the back hair, bringing me to earth with a sharp ouch. I sat up, rubbing the occiput, and a squeaky voice spoke in my ear hole. Eyeing me solicitously, or else gloating over his handiwork, I couldn't tell which, was Florence's young brother, Edwin, the Boy Scout.
Is that you, Bertie?
Oh, yes, it jolly well is. What's the idea? What do you mean, you repellent young boll weevil, by socking me with a dash-great club?
It wasn't a club. It was my scout stick. Sort of like a hockey stick. Very useful.
It comes in handy, does it?
Rather. Did it hurt?
You may take it as definitely official that it hurt like blazes.
Phew. I'm sorry. I mistook you for the burglar. I say, I'm not having much luck tonight. The last chap I mistook for the burglar turned out to be Father.
Father? Uncle Percy, you mean?
Yes. Well, how was I to know it was him? I never thought he'd be wandering about the garden in the middle of the night. I saw a shadowy form crouching down as if about to spring, and I crept up behind it and...
You didn't biff him?
Yes. Rather a juicy one.
Oh, whoopee. He's had it coming to him for years.
He was a bit shirty about it.
It annoyed him, eh?
He wanted to give me beans, but Florence wouldn't let him. She said, Father, you're not to touch him. It was a pure misunderstanding. Florence is very fond of me.
Really? A girl of strange, even morbid tastes.
So all he did was to send me to go to bed.
Then why aren't you in bed?
Bed? Cool. Not likely. How's your head?
Rotten.
Does it ache?
Of course it aches.
Have you got a contusion?
Yes, I have.
This is where I could give you first aid.
No, it isn't.
Don't you want first aid?
No, I do not want first aid. We have threshed all this out before, young Edwin. You know my views.
I don't ever seem to be able to get anyone to let me give them first aid. And what one needs is a lot of practice. Cool. I think someone's coming. Shall I sock him?
No, you young fatted, it's Jeeves. Buzz off.
Oh, cool. All right, then. Cheerio, Bertie.
Your whiskey and soda, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves. Young blighted Edwin.
Yes, sir. I encountered the young gentleman a few minutes ago. He informed me...
Never mind Edwin, Jeeves. Let us turn our attention to more important matters, viz. Your latest ruse or scheme.
Sir?
It's no good saying, sir. You know perfectly well what I mean. Your suggestion that I should tell Uncle Percy things about himself which would do something to his knotted and combined locks, which at the moment has slipped my memory.
Make his knotted and combined locks to part and each particular hair to stand on end like quills upon the fretful porpentine, sir.
Porpentine?
Yes, sir.
Can't be right. Isn't such a thing. Rubbish. However, let that pass. The point is that you recommended me for the ghastly task of ticking Uncle Percy off, and I want to know what you did it for. I mean, was it kind, Jeeves? Was it feudal?
You are alluding to the suggestion I offered to Mr. Fittleworth, sir?
That is a suggestion I'm alluding to, Jeeves.
But, sir, you expressly desired me to produce some new plan of action, insisting, if I am not mistaken, sir, that you were not particular as to the exact nature of the scheme.
Did I?
Yes, sir.
Who?
As I was saying, sir, I encountered young Master Edwin a few minutes ago in another part of the garden, and we partook of a most interesting discussion.
Did you?
Yes, sir. He approached me for advice concerning his daily acts of kindness.
Did he?
Yes, sir. In his capacity as a Boy Scout, the young gentleman is obliged each day to commit some act of a beneficial nature. Unfortunately, what with one thing and another, he is frequently falling behind schedule.
Jeeves, what are you driving at?
If I may continue, sir.
Oh, right-ho.
Master Edwin solicited my opinion, sir, as to whether his act of kindness in tidying up Wee Nook this afternoon should be expunged from the record in view of the unfortunate incineration of the edifice that resulted. I incline to the view, perhaps harshly, that it should be on the grounds, admittedly somewhat arbitrary.
Jeeves?
Sir?
Do get on with it, what?
Certainly, sir. The young gentleman then confided in me, sir, that if his exertions at Wee Nook were not taken into account, he was still behind schedule because he had performed only two acts of kindness today. The first of these was his discovery of the brooch, which was to have been her ladyship, your aunt's birthday present to Lady Florence Cray.
Oh, yes, that was a grade A act of kindness. It's just a dash shame I lost the bally thing again 5 minutes later when I tripped over the front doorstep.
Yes.
You did say you had secured a replacement brooch, didn't you?
Yes, sir. The trinket was placed by Lady Florence Cray's plate at dinner this evening.
Splendid. So what was Edwin's other act of kindness today?
The young gentleman found the original brooch again, sir.
What? Where?
Apparently, sir, immediately after leaving the cottage to contact the fire brigade, Master Edwin returned to collect his scout's stick. While he was in the hall, he noticed the package lying on the floor and realized that it was the brooch which you had informed him was a gift for Lady Florence. Accordingly, the young gentleman considered it would be an act of kindness to save you trouble by taking it straight to his sister.
What? Oh, my golly! But you mean he gave that expensive brooch to Florence, saying that it was a present from me?
Precisely, sir.
Oh, my gosh, Jeeves! Jeeves, this is going to give Florence ideas.
Yes, sir. Incidentally, sir, I chanced to be an unintentional auditor of a conversation between Lady Florence and Mr. Cheesewright while I was on my way to procure that beverage for you. I paused behind a bush, sir, momentarily, and accidentally overheard what Lady Florence was saying to her fiancé.
And what was she saying?
She was referring to him as an obstinate, mulish, pig-headed, overbearing, unimaginative, tyrannical jack-in-office, sir.
You mean they were having a row?
Exactly, sir.
What about?
I could not say, sir, but there were high words on both sides.
Jeeves, I don't like the way things are shaping. The whole trend of my foreign policy, as you know, has been to promote cordial relations between Florence and Stilton in case she should decide to return him to Storr and sign up with me again.
Yes, sir.
Well, look at the situation now. Owing to young Edwin's infernal officiousness, the pancake was in receipt only a few hours ago of a handsome diamond brooch, ostensibly a present from Bertram W., following which she apparently had a falling out with Stilton so substantial that it took her 6 distinct adjectives to describe him.
Yes, sir.
I don't want to look on the black side, but it seems to me, Jeeves, that what she must be saying to herself at this moment is, look here upon this picture and on this, as it were. I mean to say, on the one hand, a suave, knightly donor of expensive brooches. On the other, an obstinate, mulish, pig-headed, overbearing, unimaginative, tyrannical jack-in-office. If you were a girl, Jeeves, which would you prefer to link your lot with? Exactly.
Yes, sir. I think this is Lady Florence approaching now, sir.
What? Don't leave me, Jeeves.
I regret, sir, that his lordship wishes to consult me about a future possible rendezvous for his conference with Mr. Clam, sir. Good night, sir.
But oh, my gosh. Hello?
Darcy Cheesewright is a mere uncouth Cossack.
Oh, dash it.
What do you mean by oh, dash it?
Oh, dash it, a sort of protest, if you follow me.
You do not agree with me.
No, I think you've misjudged him. Isn't a Cossack one of those things clergymen wear? Besides, he's a splendid fellow, Stilton.
He is nothing of the kind.
Wouldn't you say he was the sort of chap who has made England what it is?
No.
No?
I said no.
Yes, that's right, so you did.
He has been abominably rude, not only to me, but to Father, just because he would not allow him to arrest the man in the potting shed. He said Father was shackling the police, and it was men like him, grossly lacking in any sense of civic duty, who were the cause of the ever-growing crime wave. He said that Father was a minister of the community and would be directly responsible if half the population of Steeple Bumpley were murdered in their beds.
Well, you don't think he spoke laughingly?
No, I do not think he spoke laughingly.
Well, with a twinkle in his eye, I mean.
There was not the slightest suggestion of any twinkle in his eye.
You might have missed it. It's a dark night.
Please do not be utterly absurd, Bertie. I have sufficient intelligence, I hope, to be able to recognize a vile exhibition of bad temper when I see it. His tone was most offensive. And you, he said, looking at Father as if he was some sort of insect, call yourself a justice of the peace? Four,
as in golf?
F-A-U-G-H.
Oh.
His behavior was a revelation to me. It was like some malignant wild beast deprived its prey.
Well, still, it showed zeal, what? Well, and zeal, after all, when you come right down to it, is what he draws his weekly envelope for.
Don't talk to me about zeal. It was revolting. And when I said Father was quite right, he turned on me like a tiger.
Did he? My golly.
I told him that modern enlightened thought held that imprisonment merely brutalizes a criminal. He then said something about modern enlightened thought, which I cannot repeat. Of course, I broke off the engagement immediately.
Oh, yeah. What? What? You broke off the engagement?
Yes.
Oh, you shouldn't have done that.
Why not?
A sterling chap like Stilton.
He is nothing of the kind.
You ought to forget those cruel words he spoke. You should make allowances.
I don't understand you.
Well, look at it from the poor old Buster's point of view. Stilton, you must bear in mind, entered the police force hoping for rapid advancement.
Well?
Well, of course, the men up top don't advance a young Rosser rapidly unless he comes through with something so spectacular as to make them draw in their breath with an awed Lord Love a Duck. So, The sudden arrival of a burglar in Steeplebumpley must have seemed to him manna from heaven. I mean, here, he must have said to himself, was where at last he made his presence felt. And just as he was hitching up his sleeves and preparing to take his big opportunity, Uncle Percy puts him on a leash. I mean, it was enough to upset any cop. Naturally, he forgot himself and spoke with a generous strength. But he never means what he says in moments of heat. I know, Stilton. I'll bet remorse is already gnawing him, and nobody is sorrier than he for having said nasty things about modern enlightened thought. He loves you devotedly. This is official. I happen to know. So what I would suggest is that you go to him and tell him that all is forgotten and forgiven. Only thus can you avoid making a bloomer, the memory of which will haunt you through the years. If you give Stilton the bum's rush, you'll kick yourself practically incessantly for the rest of your life. The whitest man I know.
Oh, Bertie, you are extraordinary. So quixotic. It's what I love in you. Nobody hearing you would dream that it is your dearest wish to marry me yourself.
Quite. What? Oh, no, no.
Do you think I have not understood? My dear Bertie, I'm not blind. When I broke off our engagement, I naturally supposed that you would forget. Or perhaps that you would be angry and resentful and think hard, bitter thoughts of me. Tonight I realize how wrong I'd been.
But
it was that brooch you gave me that opened my eyes to your real feelings. There was no need for you to have given me a birthday present at all, unless you'd wanted me to know that you still cared. And to give me one so absurdly expensive. And tonight you crept out to stand beneath my window in the starlight. Let us have no more misunderstandings. I am thankful that I should have seen the meaning of your shy overtures in time, and that I should have had the real Darcy Cheesewright revealed to me before it was too late. I will be your wife, Bertie.
Thanks.
In Sundry Happenings in a Garden, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie Wooster, Richard Briers, Percy Lord Worplesdon, Peter Woodthorpe, Boko Fittleworth, Jonathan Cecil, Edwin the Boy Scout, Denise Briar, Florence Cray, Bronwyn Williams. Joy in the Morning by P.G. Woodhouse was adapted for radio by Chris Miller. The program was produced by Simon Brett.
Get out of that one, Bertie Wooster. Well, let's just hope the ever-faithful Jeeves will come up with a cunning plan in episode 5 of Joy in the Morning, which you can hear at the same time next week.
Raise your glasses, gentlemen. I give you the R101.
An historic occasion.
The R101.
For all the wrong reasons.
The R101 airship took to the skies for her maiden voyage to India and crashed, killing everyone aboard.
Dragging itself across the outside of the ship.
They're breaking through.
Can a Time Lord escape fate?
You have to evacuate the airship.
Like him.
Doctor Who, Storm Warning, starring Paul McGann. Sunday at 6 p.m. and midnight on BBC 7.
I give you the R101.
Now then, Kirsten O'Brien is next here on BBC 7. It's The Big Toes after that at 4 o'clock. And then a packed evening of sci-fi, crime and thrillers and drama awaits. I'll be back tomorrow with more Investigations with Liz Parker. And tomorrow's Comedy Double Bill brings you Flying the Flag and Our Brave Boys. Bye-bye.
Online, bbc.co.uk/BBC7.
Are we almost there yet, Abs?
All right, Fliss, calm down. As explorers, we have to be very patient. Can you see anything through those binoculars of yours?
Well, I can see survival expert Simon Chapman and his 7-year-old son Joe. They'll be on the show later to talk to us about their latest adventure through the jungle. Here you go, you have a look now.
Oh, wow! It's a pair of lesser-spotted stories from our book box.
Oh, really? Which ones?
Ruby Electric and The Hound of the Baskervilles, by the looks of things. Quality.
Abs, what's that smell? I think you've stepped in something.
Oh, gross. It's our Tuesday quiz, farts and pops. I've ruined my new trainers.
Oh, join us for our adventure from 4. Keep those shoes away from...
It's the Little Toe Show. Little Toe! Little Toe!
Hello! I'm Kirsten O'Brien, and welcome to Little Toe this Tuesday. I know, Toes. That was a very long hello. I was trying to see how long I could keep going before running out of breath. Hey, shall I have another go? Okay then, here we go. Deep breath. Hello! Ooh, ooh, that was a long hello, wasn't it, Charles? Oh, you want to have a go? All right then. One, two, three. Keep going. Oh, I think you beat me there. Well done to us. That was definitely a very long hello. Anyway, now that we've said our very, very, very long hellos, shall we hear what's on the show today? Okay then, well, as usual, we'll be heading down to Wiggly Park in just a second to see what EW and Nifty are getting up to. After that, it's the second episode of Not Again Annie, followed by The Adventures of the Wishing Chair by Enid Blyton. Then there's Jerry and the Monsters. I wonder what kind of monster we'll be meeting today. I can't wait for that. And last but not least, today there'll be more adventures from Omri and Patrick in The Secret of the Indian. What a great lineup of stories. But before we do anything else, we need to get warmed up by wiggling our toes. Are you ready, Toes? Okay then, let's get wiggling. Right, Toes, do you fancy heading down to Wiggly Park to see what's going on? Yep, me too. Well, today, Nifty becomes obsessed with everyone's names. I wonder what that's all about. The story, Wiggly Park, is written by Keith Faulkner.
Shelley the French snail and Nifty the slug were slithering through the vegetable garden in Wiggly Park when Matt the milkman came in through the gate carrying a large parcel.
Winston! Are you about, Winston?
Come in, Matt.
Diggins came out of the greenhouse.
Hello. What you got there, then?
Well, it's a parcel addressed to you, Winston. I think the postman delivered it to the dairy by mistake. Look here, it says Winston L. Diggins.
Ah, that's me, all right. Must be those seed catalogues I ordered.
Hang on, hang on. What's the L stand for, Winston, eh? Is that your middle name?
Eh? Oh, it is. But I don't usually like telling people about it.
Oh, come on, mate, you can tell me, can't you? Ah, of course you can. Go on.
Well, all right then, all right. It's L for Livingstone.
Strike a light. Winston Livingstone Diggins. Yeah, that's the name and a half, that is.
Don't you go telling no one.
Meanwhile, Nifty the Slug and Shelley the French Snail had been listening as usual.
Oh, that's a good name, isn't it, Shelley? Livingstone, I like that, yeah. I wish I had more name, but I've only got Nifty.
My whole name is really Mademoiselle Michelle Lescargot, but I just like to be called Shelley,
said the snail.
Oh, what about everyone else's name, then?
I don't know, Nifty. Perhaps you should ask them.
So off went Nifty to find out what everyone's full name was. He decided to start with Thera, the old tortoise.
Thera, I'm trying to find out what everyone's proper name is. What's yours?
My name? Let me think. Yes, I was born such a long time ago. I've had my name for 29 years now. It's not always easy to remember. It is coming back to me. Yes, yes. My name is Theodora Testudo Tartarucus.
She was quite exhausted by the time she'd come to the end of it. Next, Nifty said,